I felt triumphant that I had thwarted Blackwell and given myself another reprieve. But that hadn't meant I'd let myself in for a good time. Even without being pressurized, some of the CO2 was bound to be entering into solution, turning the pH lower, and thus giving my tepid bathwater real teeth. I noticed that along with the tickling, my skin was beginning to register a mild tingling sensation as well. The bubbles reaching the surface danced a sprightly jig against my cheeks and beneath my chin. Occasionally, one with sufficient escape velocity flew up my nose, causing me to sneeze and forcing me to work harder at keeping my chin up. I weighed the advantages of putting my clothes back on versus not doing so. The clothes would help me maintain my body temperature, but they would also make it more difficult for me to continue to float and tread water. I decided to keep things the way they were for now. An hour or so later, my nerve endings were definitely feeling it, reminding me of what the bramble scratches had felt like when I woke up in the back seat of the patrol car. Except this pain was not going to lessen. It was only going to get worse. It was only going to intensify. As far as that went, however, I had figured wrong. After a while, the irritation did seem to diminish. I even became numb to it. Were my nerve endings entering into shock? I couldn't say. Minutes rolled on, rolled into hours. It was hard keeping track. I was definitely becoming more addled in my thinking. Time, which had formerly been a solid, dependable thing, now began to fray around the edges. Hamlet had used the expression, "time was out of joint." I knew what he meant. The skylight above indicated a time of day, but whether it was the same day or the next day, I couldn't be sure. Besides treading water, the only other activity I could resort to was keeping up the tapping. However, with the professor's dental plate now serving to plug the pipe, I had nothing to tap with. I forced myself to dive again and locate my jeans and tried using the brass snap to do the tapping. That certainly rang out better than my knuckles could, but I also noticed that my SOSs were becoming sloppier and sloppier. I doubted if any experienced Morse code operator could even identify what letters I was spelling out. Another stretch of time went by. My loneliness increased, and my isolation transformed the vat into a sensory deprivation tank, affecting my mind and playing tricks with my senses. I began to disassociate. I may have been humming, I may have been singing, I may have been yodeling at the top of my lungs, but I wasn't aware that it was me doing it. The same went for my tapping. It didn't seem to be me doing it any longer. It seemed to be someone else. Someone trying to attract my attention. Like a beacon. Like a bell buoy. It seemed to be calling out to me, "Red Rover, Red Rover, let Parker come over. Red Rover, Red Rover, let Parker come over." Thousands of taps later, I finally crossed over. I saw the golden light coming down from above. I saw angels descending out of a cloud of whiteness, their faces all bathed in halos. They were reaching out to me. They were people I had known and loved. The first face I saw was my Uncle Frank's. The second was Detective Lippincott's. The third face I had trouble recognizing until it hit me. It was the radical alum from the Columbia Club. I thought to myself, wait a minute. Wait a minute. These people aren't dead.